Welcome to So You Want to Be a Copywriter, brought to you by the Australian Writers Centre, the world's leading centre for writing courses. Your host is Bernadette Schwert, who you'll find at copyschool.com, and you can find out more about all our copywriting courses at copywritingcourses.com.au. Now, over to Bernadette.
Greg Baker knows more than most about AI and where it's headed. As a lecturer in computational linguistics at Macquarie University, Greg educates students on the intricacies of artificial intelligence for text and vision, and he blends his theoretical insights with practical applications. He is an AI futurist and helps the C-suite understand the future of labour, how to maximise AI productivity gains, and how to gain a deep understanding of what is really possible with AI. He's a director at the Institute for Open Systems Technology and has worked at Google and CSIRO and is a leading voice in how to understand the opportunities that AI offers us today and into the future. If you're looking to discover how AI is impacting copywriters and the writing industry overall, this is the episode you've been waiting for. Hello, I'm Bernadette Schwert. I'm the founder of the Australian School of Copywriting and the head copywriting tutor at the Australian Writers' Centre. Now, anyone can put a prompt into chat and get some copy back. But is it good copy? Will it work? Could it be better? If you'd like to get the deep knowledge about how copywriting actually works so you can use AI more effectively, take a look at some of our courses. We know that a short course can make a big impact. Just ask Samantha. She said, "I've been writing copy for years, but I'm largely self-taught. Doing Bernadette's course gave me the structures and templates I needed to write quickly and accurately so that I could present my work with confidence to a client. It reaffirmed what I already knew about copy, but it gave me so many more tools to work with and helped me to future-proof my copywriting business." Well, thank you, Samantha. Now, if you'd like to learn more, visit writercentre.com.au/essentials or copyschool.com. And if you like our podcasts, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Let's get started. Greg Baker, lovely to have you on the podcast.
Lovely to come back again.
Greg, the last time we spoke, ChatGPT had just really been launched and it was causing havoc, celebration and everything in between around the world. And, you know, with 100 million users downloading in the first 5 days, I think it was the most downloaded app ever. So, I thought it'd be nice to get you back and knowing what you know and the depth of knowledge that you have about AI and all its computations around that. I thought it'd be great to get you back and talk about where we're at. So the first question I want to launch with, now that chat has settled in and people are getting used to it and the dust has settled a little, what are some new AI developments that copywriters should know about?
Shall we start with what's happened to freelance copywriting?
Let's do that.
Okay. So it was an interesting study on Upwork data. So Upwork is one of those freelancing platforms. Many of your students will have used it. There was a sort of a fairly standard playbook where as an entrepreneur, you would go on Upwork or Freelancer or Fiverr and you would commission people to do your SEO, people to do your copywriting, people to, depending on what you wanted to do, your virtual assistant. And so it gives this really interesting little microscope where we can see how occupations and job roles and activity is changing over time. Because you can take a snapshot of what was happening in the last month before ChatGPT came out, and then what was happening in January this year. And there were three very heavily affected job titles. The one that was most heavily affected was translation. You do not want to be a freelance translator right now. It saw, year-on-year declines of sort of 30% and massive declines in the dollar rates that people are willing to pay. Because what's happened is if you throw your nicely copywritten document into one of the modern large language models, like ChatGPT-4, and ask it to translate into a major world language, it gets it so close to right that there's really no point. People are just willing to just trust it and make it do its stuff. So translators was a big one. One that was surprising to me, but only until I heard about it, which was customer service roles has dropped quite dramatically. And there's a pairing with that, which there's a massive uptake in the number of Upwork jobs looking at integrating chatbots into websites. So, I mean, what's happening is you've got a choice between, do I hire another Filipino customer service assistant or do I spend some money on having a better chatbot on my website? And everybody's choosing the chatbot on the website. And that a trend, I think, will continue as we get better chatbots, as we get more specific customer service. I think customer service roles on Upwork are going to continue to go down, which is different to customer service in other industries. So one of the other interesting studies is about what are the job roles that are the hardest to automate. And top of the pops, one of the hardest to automate is retail shop assistant. So I think we will see customer service still being a thing, but it'll be a very different kind of thing and the mix will be different. But relevant to you and to everybody on the listening to the podcast is what happened to writing jobs. And what we saw was, just remembering off the top of my head, it was about 15 to 20% drop in the number of jobs and about a 5% drop in the dollar value of the jobs that came out. And I've been puzzling over that as to what that means. It could mean, so I've got a couple of thoughts about what it means. It could be that at the end of the pandemic, instead of people wanting to have contract roles, that people wanted to move into more full-time kind of association with some company. So if you had been doing Upwork copywriting work in 2022, and you decided that you wanted a bit more stability in your income, and a lot of people did because it was rough time, you might then talk to your best clients and say, look, put me on retainer for 10 hours a month or whatever your arrangements are. And then that would turn into one job on Upwork instead of dozens of jobs on Upwork that you were competing against. And so we'd see that kind of decline. And I think that there's a big factor of that. Like, I'm not sure if in your talking to other copywriters, that sort of flight to stability, a lot of people have gone for, don't want to be independent, happy to be just working with one or two favorite clients. It's a trend that I think is pretty relevant. The other possibility is maybe it's a bit of that translation story. Is there stuff that we put it out and where in the past we would have used a human copywriter, but now we're happy to just throw that into ChatGPT? Was it the case that there was a lot of work that was so low value in the eyes of the customers that they were previously giving it to a copywriter because they had no choice, and now they've sent that off to ChatGPT? I believe there might be a little factor of that, but I don't think that's actually much of the story at all. I think it's more about a productivity story. So let's talk about productivity. Ethan Mollick is very, very famous. If you want to understand at a good level what AI means at a business level, he's the man to follow. So he's at Wharton. And so he did some studies with some management consultants. I think it was Bain and Co. or McKinsey or one of those ones, and gave ChatGPT to a subset of consultants and compared their output with the ones who didn't use generative AI tools. And what he found was a 25% speed improvement and a 15% greater improvement in the number of tasks completed, and a 40% improvement in quality. Now, these numbers are a bit fuzzy, but let's sort of turn that and project it into what it would look like for a copywriter. Now, if you're a management consultant, you do have to write a lot of stuff, but you don't have to write quite as much as a copywriter. You've got other things you have to do. So copywriters, you'd expect to see a bit more productivity benefit from generative AI tools than what these management consultants saw. So I'm thinking that it wouldn't be unreasonable to be saying we'd be expecting to see a 20-25% productivity improvement in copywriting since November 2022 when ChatGPT came out. Now, if that's the case, then of course there's going to be less jobs to do it. There'll be less people needed to do it because suddenly we've got this. All got this extra superpower of being that much more efficient in our writing. So I think what we're seeing is a one-off little spike, you know, kind of the opposite of a spike, a one-off little dip where suddenly everybody got vastly more productive in the writing part of the copywriting occupation. And we'll see similar kinds of productivity improvements in the things that surround copywriting. So if you're working as a copywriter and that's your entire job, then you spend your day writing. But for most people, there's also other stuff like collecting the brief, negotiating the brief, organizing a contract, agreeing on a price, arguing with the client afterwards when they say that it wasn't what they wanted, even though you got the evidence that it was, and chasing up your outstanding accounts payable kind of stuff. So we're going to see productivity improvements there, which will, of course, lead to more efficiencies as well. But they're not going to be as great as the dramatic hit that we saw where suddenly I need a 15,000 word essay right now. Let's do it. That we saw over the last 18 months. So I think we'll probably see that the Upwork jobs will sort of bottom out and we'll see a slow increase again because it's still worthwhile having a human being involved in the process. But if we're all being that much more productive, we don't need as many.
Yeah, I think anecdotally, what I'm also seeing, Greg, is there was that dip, you know, where people go, oh, that's the end of copywriting, you know, we're out of a job kind of thing. And then people go, oh, it hasn't actually resulted in that. It was just, oh, it's an interesting tool, but a lot of people still found it a little bit inaccessible because they just didn't know what to put into it. They didn't get back what they wanted. The prompts weren't as strong and as clear as they needed to be. So for a lot of people, I think they just went back to what they were normally doing and thought, well, eventually, you know, it'll get easier. And then you've got the copywriters who really got into it, you know, and they really helped their clients do what they needed to do. And I think that sense of things just went a little bit back to normal, you know, where people just go, it's just an easier tool for me to do what I need to do. It's going to just get that first draft done a little more effectively.
You've gone from pencils to typewriters.
Yeah, exactly. And I think just a side segue from what you're saying about the chatbots and customer service, I also heard anecdotally that from a doctor's point of view, like if you want to see a doctor about something, apparently what's happening is people are much more are likely to talk the truth to a chat bot who's a doctor versus a human because they felt that there was less judgment, there was less embarrassment, there was less vulnerability involved with actually talking to a robot that could do some form of assessment that might then get escalated to a real doctor. But I thought that was interesting, you know, that who would have thought we'd be more honest with a robot?
Well, actually, I had some evidence for that a few years ago. It was a chatbot for a pimple cream. And we had to deliberately make it make mistakes and sound robotic so that teenagers would know that they were talking to some inanimate object and the shame of having a pimple. They didn't. They knew that there was nobody who could possibly know anything about it because it was obvious they were talking to a robot, and then the robot could actually give quite good advice.
Well, if you extrapolate that, you think about counseling. You know, if people want to talk about their deepest, darkest fears and secrets, you know, a chatbot might be the way to go. But we're moving a little away from the copywriting side of things. It's so fascinating to see where the counterintuitive situations lie. But I'm interested about custom GPTs. We're hearing a lot about them. Can you just talk us through for people who've got no concept of what the custom GPT is? What is that and why are we seeing them come about from a copywriter's perspective?
I'll rewind quite a long way and see where we end up. So this time last year, ChatGPT had a maximum context window of 4,000 tokens. And I think there was GPT-4 might have had an 8,000 token window. What that meant was around 2,000 words was all it could keep in memory and all it could refer to. And so if you were writing a 3,000 word piece, it when it was generating the paragraphs at the end, it had no idea what it had written to begin with. And the only way we could solve this, if you wanted it to process something bigger than a few thousand words, is you had to have some sort of search engine. You'd put in some phrase, and that would then search for stuff and fill up a prompt with a few thousand, a few hundred words, just to leave enough room for the response to happen. And you might remember Bing came out, it's about 10 months ago now, I think, and its big thing was it would take what you said, search the web for it, and summarize the web pages, and then that would be included as part of the prompt. And then as you interacted with Bing, it would be giving you hopefully more factual information because it was getting stuff from the web, and it was able to answer questions about right up to the minute latest kind of thing. That process is known as retrieval augmented generation, which says I've got to have some sort of search engine associated with my chatbot so that it can find the latest information or about a year ago, in order for it to be able to squish that information down into something small enough that I can include it as part of the prompt that can then be sent on. And it's a really useful thing to be able to do. There's all sorts of stuff that you might want to have as context in a prompt really regularly. Like if you were a law chatbot, it would be very handy to have access to all of Australian law. And so therefore you need to have some sort of search engine associated with all of Australian law so that when you ask a question, it will go off and retrieve the relevant legislation, and then the chatbot can interpret that legislation and do something with it. But there's a mini version of this, and the mini version of it is I don't need a whole search engine to search the whole web. I've got five policy documents about how I'm supposed to write, and I've got my research notes that I've taken about this client, another document which is my research notes about the industry. I'd like to be able to query just that pile of documents, the pile of documents that I've got, that I've curated for my purposes. And so that's what a custom GPT is for. It lets you put together some documents and talk to a bot that can read those documents, process with those documents, and so on. So some of the things I've done in that space is last year at the end of the lecture, just before the exams, I put up a complete transcript of everything I've ever said in any lecture. I put up all the notes, all the slides, all in one bot, and you could then go and then distribute it to the students and said, this is a virtual Greg. Ask anything you like of this bot. It knows everything about the course that's happened these last, where it was, 13 weeks. And so they could ask questions like, give me an exam question. What topics did we cover in week 8? And all these kinds of, it's a custom specific set of stuff that's useful. Now, as far as copywriters, I can see situations where you just create a couple of custom bots for each of your different clients so that always at your fingertips, you've got any kind of information that they've said. The tiny little thing that they mentioned 6 months ago, you can flesh that out into an article and you discover it because you'd be asking your custom GPT, I need five more ideas. What haven't I talked about? And it would pick out sort of, oh, here's a thing that you haven't talked about, but was mentioned by the client 6 months ago. That kind of thing is quite powerful. Now, sometimes it makes sense for you to share that with other people. I've seen one case where this was really beautiful and I just loved it so much. It wasn't quite copywriting, but it was close. And then I'll talk about more generally how it works for copywriters. So the beautiful case I saw was a company that does sub-editing. And what they do is they check for making sure every comma is in the right place. Are we doing an Oxford comma or not an Oxford comma? Making sure the page references are all correct. Making sure we always capitalize the letters consistently. If you make any statement, they go and fact check it. And so they had their checklist of things that they check, which is an enormous document. It's like 3 or 4 pages of fine print of all the things that their sub-editors are supposed to check. And so they put that up as a custom GPT so that they then said to their customers, look, we are a very expensive service. If you just want to get something cheap done, just use this bot. Just give your document to this bot. It has been told to do sub-editing just the way we would. It's not guaranteed to do as good a job as we would, but it will do. It will follow the same steps that we would. And so if you've got a customer who's so price sensitive that it's not even worth talking to them, they go off and do their thing, and they go away with this wonderful positive feeling about, oh, what a lovely company. They gave me these tools that let me do sub-editing, and I know that when I need the job done properly, I'll go and get that company to do it. So it's kind of a loss leader, except it didn't really cost them anything. They just took their policy documents and their checklists and called it a bot, and off you go. Now, where that works for copywriters is there's a rule that I find across almost all consulting and freelancing, and that is niche is rich. If you say, I'm a copywriter, you're not going to get any work at all. If you say that you're a copywriter specializing in cosmetics, you'll probably do a bit better. If you're a copywriter who specializes in the chemistry of cosmetics, you'll be quite busy. If you are a copywriter who specializes in dangerous chemicals that are in cosmetics, you will find yourself absolutely deluged with work and also able to keep up with it, because you'll just repurpose article after article after article after article. And what's your huge value add there, of course, is as soon as any study comes out that has any mention of anything to do with dangerous chemicals, you'll be on top of it. You'll include that in your pile of notes. Of course you'd do that. Well, why don't you put those notes in a custom GPT? And it's kind of humble brag. It's, I am so good as a copywriter that I am even going to give you access to my bot that has all the information that I have. You can go and generate articles if you like, and go and use them. I don't care. If you want it done properly, I'll take that article that you generated and I'll edit it down just the way you want it. Or even, you've seen what I've got there. If I can do that, what sort of quality articles am I going to be generating for you? So that, as an advertisement of your niche, to show your mastery of some domain, that's the kind of thing that a GPT can be really nice for a copywriter.
That's really well said, Greg. Fantastic. I love the Greg bot. That was brilliant. And I want to talk about monetization in just a second about the custom chats, and you just sort of touched on it a moment. But I just want to throw into the niches are riches kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this is another podcast that people can access already, but it was Lynn Testoni, who's a journalist slash content writer slash copywriter, who specialized in building. If you look at the biggest category, building, within that it was architecture, within that homewares, and within that products, you know, like building products, and from tiles to carpet to drapes to benches, mm-hmm. you name it, she was kind of the go-to woman. But she was said exactly the same thing, that when a paper came out about the changes to the Building Commission, for example, which is kind of not really a copywriter's, you know, ballpark, but it was Building Commission, the changes, it's big for the builders that she dealt with and the architects. She knew about it before half of them did. So they came to her for, she would say to them in an email, for example, or whatever, say, hey, did you know the Building Commission's changed and all your laws that you've been working towards have now been altered? You need to, they're like, wow, Lynn, thanks very much for being our go-to source, our chatbot. So that's the example of niching, really powerful, because she doesn't have to advertise. People know what she does, you know, and she's up to date with it. And that also helps Lynn, because she doesn't have to keep keeping up to date with all these other industries. She just specializes in building. So I love the analogies that you've used there. But I do want to talk about the monetization, and I'll just sort of summarize what I heard. You've got a custom chat that does, you know, some kind of article writing that you let a client access on your behalf for free. And they get back something that's not bad, but if they want something really good, then they come to you. Do you see these custom chats as being paid for the way we might use an app that's free, but you get a little bit of a paid version as well? What's this like? I guess is what I'm asking, that we already know something about. Where is this headed?
My take on this is I think this was a project that somebody did at OpenAI with no coherent plan as to what they were thinking about and had no strategy as to what they were doing with it. And they just sort of put it out there just to see whether people would like it, discovered that it was kind of useful and people liked making these bots. Where it goes from now, I guess it's whether Sam Altman likes them or not. There's been rumors of maybe we should have better ways of commercializing them. Maybe there should be like ways of getting creators paid better for the use of their bots. I don't have any strong opinions on that. I don't know whether that's going to work or whether that's not going to work. I don't know if if it even makes sense to do this. It's not like OpenAI is going to get extra money as a result of people creating these GPT bots. So I don't know whether they bother doing it. I mean, maybe they might do it because it's fun. Maybe they might do it just to improve what people think of them or lock them into the ChatGPT universe. But I'm not. I just don't know. I don't know whether there's going to be an equivalent of anything, and they might just turn around and drop it at any moment. They haven't made any promises of this being a product that will always be there.
I
It
heard,
could be replaced by something.
again, with my limited knowledge, I'd love to explore what you think of this, but what I'm hearing is the big consulting firms that you, McKinsey, EY, KPMG, etc., having their own custom chats internally, similar to the Greg one. Do you need OpenAI to do this? How do you actually build a custom chat yourself?
So there's two ways of doing this, two products you can use. Either you can buy a subscription to ChatGPT Pro, or for a consulting company, you'd be buying ChatGPT Teams. And with Teams, you can then share it within your organization rather than sharing it to the entire world. Or there's the equivalent, which is if you buy Microsoft Copilot Pro, which is Microsoft's rebranding of ChatGPT, then it's the same process. And I mean, I can screen share on this, but I'm not sure that'll come across in the podcast very well. But you simply just go to the My Custom GPTs in either of the interfaces. It'll ask you a few questions like, what's this GPT about? What documents should I have? What's a nice logo for it? What's sort of standard questions that you might want to prompt people to ask? And it'll just walk you through it. It takes about 5 minutes. I've walked many, many people through it. And I'm not talking technical people. I'm talking people who sort of nervously click on a mouse uncomfortably through it, 5, 10 minutes, something like that. If you've got a GPT Pro subscription or a Microsoft Copilot subscription, it's already there. You can go and do it. It's a fun kind of thing to do. Ethan Mollick, who I mentioned earlier, actually makes all the executive staff in coming in through the MBA program. He sits them down and says, you've got an exercise where you have to make a you bot that has something really special about what do you bring to the world, and you're going to need to make a bot of that. And sometimes that's a work-related thing. Sometimes it's one particular person put together what he thought was the ultimate Dungeons and Dragons character. Backstory generator. That kind of just play with it. It'll give you an insight into what AI is capable of. And in that sense, it's going to pay back the time that you spend on it. And maybe you might see some interesting way of commercializing this or find some way of using it to increase your own productivity or increase the communication with your customers or something like that. Don't go in with high hopes. Go in with a sense of, I'm going to have some fun with this.
And Greg, you may not have the breadth, even though you are one of the most broad-minded people when it comes to AI. You know a lot about a lot. But from a search point of view, I'm really curious, how is this going to affect the search engine optimization industry, where, we've been really educated to create SEO content that Google loves and only Google, and now all of a sudden we're using chat to generate a lot of information and resources and tell us where to go. Where are we going with this, do you think?
Well, I first have to take umbrage that you didn't think that was in my remit of broadness. You know that I actually did work at Google, and one of
My
the
apologies, Greg, for
and what
underestimating you.
one of the signals that Google was using for a very long time was something that I found. I didn't actually code it up myself, but I found the signal and then handed over to the team. I was actually on the Maps team, so it wasn't really relevant for text search. Dear Google, Google is in serious trouble. It's in serious trouble at many, many levels. I'd like to say that they're in serious trouble because I'm not still there, but I think maybe there's
That's true.
a couple of hundred thousand other people who might have something to say about this. Structurally, Google has the problem that you get rewarded for launching a new thing and you don't get rewarded for maintaining anything. So Google, if you look at it, launches zillions of products and they look really promising and then they go nowhere. And there's a lovely website called Killed by Google, which is the list of all the products that Google have launched and then just abandoned afterwards. And you'd think that search would be one of these core things that they would care about, but the same phenomenon is there. If you launch a new thing, you get promotions and pay packets and stock options. And if you maintain and fix things that are broken in the existing infrastructure, you don't get much of a return on it. So they've been coasting for quite a long time. And we've seen that in the quality of search results has been going down and down and down and down because everybody knows how to game the system and how to SEO optimize their content. So the crucial thing you want now is you want to be the completion sentence in ChatGPT. So what do I mean by that? Well, what is ChatGPT doing? When you type in some prompt, the first word that comes out is the most probable word that's going to come next. Like if you're talking about, we gave the patients XYZ drug, and that reduced the incidence of the next word is not likely to be drywall.
Not meant to be what?
Like, it's not likely to be drywall. It's
Try,
not,
yeah, like
yeah,
sort of the out of context, yeah.
construction. No, it would be something like, reduced infection rates or myocardial, something like that. That first word then gets fed back in, and now we're predicting the next word and the next word and the next word. So the holy grail of what next generation search engine optimization is not going to be search engine optimization, it's just being the face of is the sentence, if your company is the best at, let's say, cheese making. So the best cheese making company is, what's the next word that comes after that? What is the average most likely word that you would find in its corpus of stuff, then that's the goal. That's where you want to
Okay,
be.
so let me just sort of move through that. If that phrase, the best makers of cheese is, let's say,
Bigger?
Kraft,
Yeah,
yep, Bega,
craft,
whatever,
yeah.
Krafta. Are you saying that that's the text that people should be using on all their websites?
You want to make sure that you've got a consistent kind of phrase so that it's the most likely thing that comes next. Yes.
Wow. Okay, so here's the next
And
question.
not just on your website. It's got to appear hugely spread out in all sorts of different media about this. So you want to make sure that it's in the people are saying it on YouTube, that it's appearing in the transliteration, not what to call it translation, the subtitles. Where you've got captioning, that's the word, in the captions on YouTube, you want it there. If you can get books written or other sort of content something non-traditional where that can be the case, if that can be the phrase gets used on Wikipedia or anything like that, the more likely that craft is the next word, then that's what it's going to generate. That's what ChatGPT is going to generate.
So here's the next question. Sorry, you go.
Yep. And if you've got that, then who cares what your search engine position is? Because fewer and fewer people are going to Google to search for information. If you're chasing search engine optimization, I'm sorry, you're in trouble. People will shift to other search engines like Marginalia that do niche content specifically, or DuckDuckGo that preserves privacy. Google's days as the only source of search are very, very much numbered.
Wow, that's fascinating. So here's a question. Is there a service that enables us to find out what is being typed into chat?
No.
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
It would be fascinating. OpenAI have this information. So do some of their competitors. I don't know if they would monetize it. I think that would be a little bit disturbing because there'd be an awful lot of personal information being shared there that perhaps shouldn't be.
Yeah, but from that business point of view, just taking the personal stuff aside, you know, like we know you can go to SEMrush and type in whatever keyword you want and you can see what people are typing in to find you. I'm wondering if there's some way, or how do we get that from we chat?
That is indeed an interesting question. Well, it assumes that people are going to be going to your website and that your website is the primary sort of funnel through which information is coming to get the SEMrush equivalent. I'm not sure what the equivalent is in the chat world.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's not just, well, ChatGPT takes the place of Google. There's a whole variety of different options. You don't have to be using GPT. You might be using an open source language model on your own laptop that runs offline and gives you much greater guarantees of privacy and not really that much a difference in terms of the user experience.
Yeah.
And you may well be making purchasing decisions based on interactions you're having with software that's on your own laptop. In terms of privacy and justice and that kind of ideas of the software on my computer should be acting on my behalf, not on behalf of the big nameless corporates. That's the future we want. So I think in the future that we want to have, there should be no equivalent of SEMrush.
This is a technical question that I don't know how this works. So you put a prompt into chat.
Yep.
And it references the internet and it creates its most predictable answer. What's it got to do with Google? You know, is it going through the Google gateway or is it above Google? You know, it references the internet through another doorway. Forgive the technical language.
Yeah.
Do you get my question?
Yeah,
what's Google got to do with chat is my question.
Surprisingly little. So most of the hard work involved in making a chatbot is training it up. And it's trained up on unsupervised text, where it's just you give it huge numbers of sentences, and then you hide a word and say, what's the next word, the one that we've hidden? And if it gets it wrong, you say, bad chatbot. Do better next time. And so it figures out what it was doing wrong and it adjusts its weight so that the next time it gets that question, it's more likely to get the right answer. And so there's a database called the Common Crawl, which is a crawl of very large number of pages on the internet. OpenAI have been very cagey about what else they've got in there. We think that they've got a very large corpus of books. We know that they trained the Whisper model on vast amounts of YouTube content. That's how it's able to recognize speech and turn it into text. And there'll be a cutoff window. So if you look at GPT at the moment, I think the cutoff window is like November, depending on which version you're using. So in November 2023, they had downloaded the whole Common Crawl, they had scraped whatever other content they were using, had collected whatever other books, and trained their model up on them. That training process is a multi-month, sometimes multi-year process involving incredible amounts of compute power, incredible amounts of electrical power, incredible amounts of cooling. And then you end up with this set of weights, which is literally some numbers that you add up and you subtract and multiply and you take exponents, and that's it. That's how it generates each word that's coming out. You can say to it, if you had to go and find out about cheese, what would you want to do? And here are some tools that are available to you. Here's a search tool. Here's a write a program tool. Here's some other tools. And it can decide, what I really need to do now is do a search, or decide, I know enough already. I know exactly what the next token is going to be. And if it chooses, I need to do a search, then at that point, you might choose to use Google as your search engine, or you might choose to use Bing or something else. OpenAI, of course, use Microsoft's infrastructure because, of course, the very close relationship between that and Microsoft. And you get some search results back. That then is text. So now we've got your prompt, a few words of text where it decided what tool it needed, the text from the search, and then what's the most likely word to come out next? And if the next likely word is craft or beaker or cheddar or something like that, then it'll put out the word cheddar, and then it'll try to predict the next word after cheddar, and then it'll try to generate the next word after cheddar, and so on.
Yeah, it's changing. Let's talk about that whisper concept that you just mentioned. Can you just talk us through what that is?
Of all the productivity tools and that I've seen, that just, I don't understand why people don't make more use of this. Speech to text is perfect now. If you tried to use speech to text tools in the past, if you tried to dictate to a computer before, you probably have this sort of bad feelings of it, you know, often translated things wrong, or it often misunderstood what you were saying, or had spelling mistakes, or used the wrong homonym, or who knows what. It's not the case anymore. You can, and even in noisy environments, you can get absolutely flawless transcripts. So I've taken to, I'll just take my phone with me when I'm taking the dog for a walk, and if I have some idea, I'll just narrate to my phone for 10 minutes and go home and transcribe it. And sometimes run it through ChatGPT to remove all the ums and ahs and reorder my thoughts, because like halfway through the conversation, I'll be like, oh no, actually the first thing I should say is, and have it rearrange these things. And for copywriting, Do you like sitting down at your laptop in a closed room and close the curtains and focus on, or would you much rather be wandering outside in the sunlight, just narrating, talking your things to your phone or to a tape recorder or anything that can record the audio? You can then run that through Whisper and get absolutely flawless speech to text from it. I don't understand why people don't use this. And people say, oh, well, you know, I'm worried about privacy and, you know, it'll be expensive. And I said, but it's free. You can, the model is free. I paid for a program called Mac Whisper on my Mac because I liked the author and I liked the program and it was convenient to use. And I think I paid like 17 euros or something for it. And it does all my transcription on my computer, never leaves anywhere, and I don't feel any, there's no cost associated with it. And that's before we start getting into the really mind-boggling things that Whisper was trained to listen to YouTube videos and output whatever was on the captions, which means not only does it transcribe distorted English speech in hundreds of accents flawlessly, if you are speaking in Chinese, and well, there was a very large number of videos that had Chinese speakers and English subtitles. So it flawlessly translates from Chinese into English. It translates from a huge number of European languages into English. If you are working as a copywriter and English is not your native language, Well, just wander around the backyard talking into your phone in your native language and generate the English output from it.
Amazing.
It
What
is. And
other?
I don't understand why people aren't using it.
Yeah,
It's
maybe they
just buzz.
just don't know
Yeah.
about it. Well, until
Yeah.
now, right? And
Yeah.
on that, Greg, you've got your finger on the pulse. What other tools are you seeing and hearing about that we should know about as writers or in general?
I have a real soft spot for a company called 11 Labs. 11 Labs do text to speech. So if you take your copywriting and you'd like it to be read out by a professional actor, that would be an expensive proposition. No, it's not. 11 Labs' models, language models, are so sophisticated, you really genuinely can't tell that it's not a human being talking. And there's a huge variety of voices that they have already trained. You can also clone your own voice. And then they can take your voice and they can also translate it into other languages as well. So do you have readers or listeners to your podcast in other countries? Yeah. Well, what countries do you get?
India, China, Sri
India.
Lanka.
Oh, okay. Well, how's your Hindi?
Could do with a bit of brushing up.
Okay, well, why don't you let's have a little segment now where you describe your podcast in English, and then I'll splice in you saying it in Hindi.
Okay. So this podcast is for copywriters who are interested in learning how to grow their business, become more competent and confident and courageous in finding clients and being able to build the business of their dreams.
And here's the Hindi version.
तो ये पॉडकास्ट उन कॉपीराइटर्स के लिए है जो अपने व्यापार को बढ़ाने, अधिक आत्मविश्वासी और साहसी बनने में रुचि रखते हैं, ग्राहकों को ढूंढने में और सक्षम होने में अपने स्नो का व्यापार बनाए।
Your Hindi is amazing, Bernadette.
Thank
Sounds
you. Yeah, I
flawless.
had
Yeah.
worked on it pretty
Yeah,
quickly.
yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. And it's like yesterday you didn't speak any Hindi at all.
Amazing.
Yes.
What else? What else is going on? Well, let me add one thing that I'm seeing, which is I can give 20 seconds of my voice, as I've done just to you now, and the model can be trained on that to create my voice in its entirety. To deliver a 1 hour speech. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Absolutely. So, just to reassure everybody who's listening to this, we are actually having this conversation in real life. I'm not sure if you can hear the dog in the background barking, just to prove that it's real life.
That was designed, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's absolutely no way that you would know. If we cloned Bernadette's voice, she can deliver the next 20 podcasts. She'll just write them, and we'll have a variety of fake guests on. There would be absolutely no way of knowing the difference. And so your skills as a copywriter, you're also a scriptwriter now. Not only are you a scriptwriter, but you can be a director. Now, at the moment, you can be a director of a radio program or a podcast. We are seeing models like Sora, so it's Sora, that just came out recently, which lets you take what you say and produce video. And the prediction markets at the moment are saying, probably in the next couple of years, we might start seeing full-length feature films being generated just off the text of them. Again, that means the copywriters kind of have the superpowers here, because yes, people can generate a script, but it's not going to be a very interesting script. And you then take that script and then generate a video from it, with all the special effects you possibly want, using any actor that you're legally allowed to use. That's a really powerful picture.
You can see why Hollywood's terrified, can't you?
Yeah. Piece of trivia for you. Hollywood is much, much smaller than the gaming industry. The computer gaming industry has script writers because you have masses of plot that you need, because when you're playing through, you may well go through several different variants, so you need to have plots that are flexible. It employs more composers than Hollywood. My son has been putting together a playlist of the most interesting gaming industry soundtracks. Graphic artwork, again, the gaming industry is enormously bigger than Hollywood. If you dream of being a writer writing scripts for Hollywood, I just urge you that I think maybe just try and find the computer gamers in your life and see what companies are writing the games that they're interested in, because my gosh, there's a lot of money in that space, and it's overlooked. People don't think, I'm going to become a computer game story writer.
Yeah, fascinating. And in my experience as well, a lot of the copywriters who do copywriting do it because it supports their screenwriting career, you know, or yes, their novel yeah. writing career. And they are
and it's the exact opposite of that. The gaming industry is so huge that you see, for example, you know who the most listened to composer in 2012 was? The guy who wrote the Angry Birds theme music.
Oh, really? Right.
Of course.
My son used to listen to Angry Birds.
Yeah, everybody was into Angry Birds, yeah. So the royalties that you see in these are just, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And the money they can afford to spend on even like the tiny little corner of, oh, we do need to have a plot here. We'd better employ a writer for it.
Yeah. Well, just on that, let's just wrap up because this has been an amazing chat, Greg, and I could talk to you forever. But let's talk about the jobs market for the future for writers. You've touched on it right there. But let's say someone did want to do that. What would they type in to seek, or where would they find those jobs?
In Australia, the gaming industry is much smaller and much more niche. We don't tend to make a lot of AAA list games here. So it's much more of a word of mouth network connection kind of thing. So you'd be looking at go to esports conventions or... Esports conventions.
Esports,
you know, yeah. Again, another one of those sort of mind-boggling things is that, you know, the amount of money that is spent in Australia on esports competitions.
Australia's
not
sports,
even, yeah. Things like, you know, a Fortnite battle or a Pokemon championship. The money on that is substantially larger than all of Netball Australia's budget, including professional leagues, including, you know, everybody who's playing it every Saturday. It's much larger than the rugby union, for example. So these esports events are often places where you'll interact with a lot of gamers, and they're often sponsored by a lot of computer gaming companies, and you'll often see some of the smaller players there. So that can be a place where you might find some contacts, and if you're saying, look, I write interesting plots for computer games, here's a something, see where it heads. I mean, particularly if you can exist on an existing platform. If you see a computer game that's it's kind of either open world or it's got a characters that then can be several generations later. So like the Zelda series, for example, you know, there was many, many Zeldas that were made. If you've got that kind of thing, then obviously they're going to be very interested in, well, I've got some ways that I could write for this, or I know your characters really well, and I think this could be a plot. I think that could be possible.
Mm, excellent. And any other tips for people, like with sub-editing, you know, we know that chat hallucinates, gets things wrong a lot. What
about,
roles does
about
that play?
About 3.5 to 6% of everything that ChatGPT or these other large language models produce is just pure hallucination. And that has just opened up an enormous amount of copy editing that needs to be done. There's an awful lot of fact-checking that needs to happen. And even if you abandoned any hope of being a copywriter and just said, all I will do is I will fact-check somebody else's prompt outputs, I suspect there would be an awful lot of money in that.
Wow. And that's kind of, we've always had fact checkers, but they're mainly for newspapers about dates and, you know, like structural things about accuracy that you put in a newspaper. But for copy,
It was never a problem because
Yeah, it was
why
kind
would
of
you just, if you just made stuff up, you'd get sacked.
exactly, because you didn't have to
But
check it because it was coming from you or coming from the
yeah.
client. But only this third party over here, this nefarious little
Just makes things
character
up, yes.
who makes stuff up.
Yeah.
That's really interesting and really exciting. And I think it's a really positive note to end on. Greg Baker, thank you
Can I?
again.
Yeah,
Yeah.
there's a few more things I just want to throw in
Please.
there.
Yeah, yeah,
Yes,
yeah.
yes. So ChatGPT is not the end of the story. Right now, the top of the pops is a company called Anthropic and their Claude Opus model. And so if you want to stand out from the crowd in terms of the kinds of outputs that you're getting from your LLM, this is where you want to be.
Large language model, just for people knowing.
Yes,
LLM, yep.
large language model. So that's the
Yep.
generic name for these things that generate text. Now, what happened is OpenAI have this process called reinforcement learning from human feedback. And back when we last spoke, I think they had just begun doing that in a little bit more earnestly. Like when ChatGPT first came out, you could ask it, what's the recipe for sarin gas? And it would happily tell you. Or what's the how do I make a nuclear bomb? And it would tell you. And what happened is that they then have a team of people in Nigeria that take the text output, the texts that you put in, and they actually have two copies of it. They have an output that was shown to you and an alternate output. And they have to decide, these Nigerians, which was the most helpful, harmless, and honest of the two outputs. And little bit by little bit, they have nudged ChatGPT, every fortnight they do a new release, to be more helpful, harmless, and honest. Unfortunately, it's also led to a sort of a softening of ChatGPT's powers. It's not willing to say anything new. It's not willing to say anything edgy because it might not be helpful, harmless, and honest. It's been trained for the last year to offend fewer people, to say more neutral things, to say more average things, to shrink the Overton window of stuff that we'll say. Now, Anthropic have taken a different approach, and I think it's, in one way, it's a dramatically better approach, and in another way, it terrifies me, which is these language models, they've already absorbed all of Western philosophy and Eastern philosophy, and who knows whatever else. You can ask it, look at this answer. Do you consider this beneficent, non-maleficent? Is it good? Is it ethical? Is it right? And thus, instead of having to have this army of poorly paid Nigerians who had incredible mental health issues, by the way, because they had to decide, well, which of these two horribly harmful, unhelpful, and dishonest things is the least dishonest? Instead of that really rather tragic job, it's the job of the AI to figure out whether something is appropriate. And so the result of that is that the Opus model in particular is much more creative, much richer. It'll generate a lot more points. It'll suggest things that you hadn't otherwise seen. It'll do a much, much better job than ChatGPT does. So number one, definitely that's a well worthwhile
Okay,
thing to play
that's an
around with.
alternative to chat,
An
you're saying.
alternative to ChatGPT. And
Right.
not just an alternative, but it's the this is how you signal that you're a much better class of copywriter, and the results you get from it are outstandingly better. Like
Wow.
it's night and day. You can see the difference.
Is it free as well?
It's the same price as ChatGPT Pro, or if you really are extremely scummy, you can sign up as a developer and just get API credits, and then you use a rather ugly looking dashboard. Workbench, sorry, and you can get the same effect,
Right.
and
So
then
just
sort of a few cents, yeah.
if you could be quite clear about what it's called again.
Yes, so you go to the Anthropic website, and you'll get a button that says "Try Claude," as in Claude, and you'll have the choice of models there. Like you have a choice between GPT-3.5 and GPT-4 when you go to the OpenAI website, you'll have choices, and one of them is the Opus model, which is their big strong one.
Okay, so there's Anthropic, and then there's Claude, and where does Opus come into it?
So that's the name of the model. So
Oh, okay.
Anthropic is the company.
Yep.
Claude is like ChatGPT, and then Opus is like the version number.
Got it.
It's not. It's
Lovely.
actually the size of the model, but it's
Yeah. Wow. Okay, that was a very, very useful addition. Is there anything else they should know about competitors, alternatives to chat that people
Okay,
need
so
to
if you've
be
got
aware
no
of?
money, but you've got some memory on your computer and you don't mind it being a bit slower, then the Mixtral models. Now, this is going to be absolutely horrific for whoever is transcribing this podcast, and unless we have absolutely flawless recording. So the company is called Mistral, Mistral, and they released some models called Mistral. And then they realized that they could mix them together to make an even better model, and that's Mixtral, Mixtral. And you can run that on your own laptop with, there's lots of ways that you can run it. I, being a little bit geeky, I use a program called Olama. It just gives me a text-based window. But I can type in a prompt there and I can get responses back. And you can get variants that have no censorship, no reduction at all. They will genuinely give you a reflection of what's on the internet. Now, I'm sure you're not actively promoting copywriting for porn or aggression or something as part of your career, but if that's the kind of thing that you need to write, you won't be able to get anything out of any of the public models because, OpenAI would not be able to live down. Yes, we've been used in 10 porn novels. It's not what they want to be known for, but say the open source models where it's up to you what you did on your computer. We don't want to
So it's kind of
know.
like the dark web version
The
of
dark
it.
web version of it is another possibility that people
Yeah.
need to be aware of.
Wow.
Now, Mixtral, you can run it on your own computer, or there's another company called Grok, Groq. Now, this is a bit confusing because Elon Musk had Grok, Grok. Which I'm glad he's done it. It's good that that's been created. It's good there's open source models. Yeah, yay, go Elon.
What was Grok? I thought it was an investment vehicle for the Atlassian people.
But
Grok, there was
Groq
Grok Ventures.
is a completely different thing
Okay,
altogether.
what is that? Just explain that for me.
So one of the problems with these large language models is that you need incredible amounts of server infrastructure in order to run them. You need big computers with big GPUs. But the actual calculations are really very simple. So Grok, the Groq company, have designed their own custom hardware that runs these calculations extremely quickly. Now, by extremely quickly, I mean thousands of words per second. So if you are on a deadline and you're typing stuff into ChatGPT and it's doing its usual sort of, this is the answer to what this. Okay, dive over to Grok, type the same thing in, and within a second you'll have like a 1,000-word essay. You have to see the speed of it to just, it hits you like you've like, whoa, that was fast. This is incredible quantity of stuff, faster than you can possibly think, faster than you can possibly read. That one's lots of fun when you're, particularly when you're on an urgent deadline and you need to get stuff done. There's nothing faster. And at the moment, that's free. Basically, they haven't got around to writing their billing code, is what I've heard. They were so busy making
You think you
super
do that
amazing
first
hardware, they
when
didn't
you
get around to think about
really
the
anything else?
money. In terms of models like that, I think that's kind of, and there's Perplexity is an interesting one. Perplexity AI have a different take on things, which is they're a language model designed to help you learn something. So if you are in the situation where you've perhaps got a new client in a new industry and you want to understand that industry well, you'll probably get very good results out of Perplexity because what they'll do is it will suggest, here's what you should learn about, and here are the resources to learn about it. Now off you go and learn about it. It's a very different take on these language models that otherwise would just try to teach you itself. With the possibility of hallucinations, Perplexity doesn't really have that problem because it might hallucinate. Here's a thing that you should learn about, but then it won't be able to generate any references as to where you learn about it.
It's the
So
teacher, the
it's a,
teacher kind of thing, isn't it?
yeah.
Wow, amazing.
So yeah, I do like that. It's when I've got students who've got gaps in their knowledge, it's the first place I send them nowadays. And that's if learning new things is part of your personality and your way of doing stuff, then it's a great platform for doing so.
Amazing. Greg, as mentioned, I could talk to you all day. You're a delight to talk to. Your breadth is extraordinary. Your ability to communicate it is unparalleled. And I just really, really thank you for your time today. It's absolutely been a joy.
It's been lots of fun talking to you, Bernadette. I'll see you in a year's time when we're talking about whatever's happening in 2025.
It won't be us talking. It'll be a bot talking.
It'll probably just be us. You know, we'll just email each other and generate a podcast from it. But, you know,
exactly.
I look forward to that email exchange.
I do too. I do too. Yeah. What a trip that was. What's clear is that this AI juggernaut is here to stay. It's getting faster and the trip is getting wilder. Well, my advice, courtesy of Greg, buckle in, stay tuned, keep learning, and more importantly, keep using the tools. Most of them are free at this point, so it's easy to do so. So stay up to date. I'll be working hard to bring you those updates in the future podcasts. So on that note, I'll close with my much-awaited joke because I know you're waiting for it. They've made a new artificially intelligent Oreo. It's one smart cookie. And my motivational quote, if you can call it that, but it's just something to think about moving into the future. To keep your job safe from AI, use AI to do your job better. That's a bit meta. On that note, I'll say goodbye. All the best.
Thanks for listening to So You Want to Be a Copywriter. You'll find the show notes at soyouwanttobeacopywriter.com.au. This podcast was brought to you by the Australian Writers' Centre. Do you want to get started as a professional copywriter? Have a look at our course, Copywriting Essentials. Created by Bernadette Schwert, this 5-week online course will teach you how to write words that sell and get paid to be creative. Find out more at writerscentre.com.au/copywriting. And thanks for listening to So You Want to Be a Copywriter. You'll find the show notes at soyouwanttobeacopywriter.com.au.